Moncrief on News Talk.
As the infection rates and lockdown drags on here, we thought we'd take a look around some of our European neighbours just to see if their experience of the citizens in those countries is the same or different to ours. Seán Murray, European correspondent with Euronews, joins us now on News Talk. Seán, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Seán.
In general terms, before we visit any individual countries, but in general terms, in Brussels, is there the same level of discontent with the vaccine rollout as there is in Ireland?
Oh, yeah, there's been huge discontent here since the start of the pandemic because the hospitals really have been overwhelmed for some time now. And the government just announced further restrictions about a week ago, but they're not as tight as Ireland. For example, you can travel anywhere in Belgium. The weather is very nice here. We went up to the beach a few days ago. You can travel where you want, but you aren't allowed to have bubbles of more than four people outside. And, you know, restaurants and bars obviously remain closed. They were hoping to open them on the 1st of May. They won't be doing that now. But retail remains open. If you make an appointment, you can only spend 15 minutes in the shops and so on because the cases have been rising here. And I think it's just so obvious when you're walking around the streets, particularly the weekends here in Brussels, the parks are packed, particularly when the weather is nice. There's large congregations of teenagers sort of drinking and so on and, you know, having fun really. And the traffic levels are really high. And before the restrictions on the retail units, the queues were really long outside the high street shops. So you could tell, you know, that people have sort of slightly given in when it comes to the restrictions. And then you see the cases rising and the ICU numbers going up. And again, particularly like across Europe, it's very much younger people who are the ones arriving in hospitals now.
Right. And within the European Commission, within the European Parliament, is there that, because no one's getting the vaccine as fast as they want to get it, is there that discontent and frustration? And who are they aiming it at?
Yeah, there actually, you know, the EU believes that by and large, the EU procurement process was the right thing to do. 27 member states working together to get the right prices to ensure that they wouldn't be battling it out amongst each other to get access to the vaccines. Because if you thought about Ireland, Malta, you know, Estonia, small countries that haven't got negotiating heft of the likes of Germany, of the Netherlands, where they actually produce the vaccines, it would be a disaster for Ireland in particular. We wouldn't probably have access to any vaccines. So I think there is a confidence that the 27 member states, you know, process was the right thing to do and that that will, you know, play out in time. But that the real blame here, as we know, is AstraZeneca, which essentially the EU's position is that it sold its doses twice, once to the UK, once to the EU, and the EU is suffering because the UK, with its clause in its contract, isn't allowing AstraZeneca export any of the vaccines to the EU, while the EU is exporting, has exported since Christmas, 21 million vaccines to the UK. So, I mean, there is obviously criticisms about the EU, how it took too long amount of time to authorize the vaccines. But then the EU would put that down to the fact that they wanted to ensure, you know, safety. And because Europe is one of the worst places in the world for vaccine hesitancy, they wanted to make sure they were so cautious along the way, particularly on issues like pricing as well, because, you know, some member states were arguing about the prices of Pfizer against the price of AstraZeneca. So it is much harder for 27 countries with differing governments, differing priorities to actually move that fast.
Yeah. Are there any, I mean, there had been kind of unsubstantiated reports that various countries were thinking of, if you like, buying outside the pool, perhaps buying from the Russians, for instance. Is any country going ahead and doing that?
Yeah, Hungary has done that already, and it's going to also do that with the Chinese vaccine as well. The difference between an EMA, European Medicines Agency authorization, is that the liability is with the member state. So if something goes wrong and you do an emergency authorization with, let's say, Sputnik V, then the liability is with the government. But if it's an EMA authorized, actually the liability is with the vaccine company. So there is a huge risk in doing an emergency authorization. And the reason why, I mean, it's fully allowed for countries to do that, but the reason why they kind of frown upon it is because if everybody starts going their own way, that whole solidarity issue around the 27 member states sticking together kind of diminishes. And it means that the manufacturers of the vaccine kind of have the upper hand. And then that kind of, you know, outdoes the whole point of us not fighting it out, you know, amongst each other. Austria is also in talks to try to get 100 million vaccines from Sputnik V as well. And that's interesting because, you know, Sebastian Kurz, the Chancellor of Austria, has come under huge pressure because when his government was entitled to buy, you know, a certain amount pro rata of all the vaccines, and he didn't buy enough of the Pfizer-BioNTech because he decided, like many countries, to just rely on AstraZeneca. This is before we knew there was going to be a supply issue. And he's been heavily criticized because the Pfizer one is a more expensive vaccine. And some people are saying he did it because, you know, he didn't want to spend the money. And now his country is in a bad situation, particularly other countries like Bulgaria and poorer countries. They didn't buy their Pfizer you know, entitlement. And other countries bought them up. Denmark, Malta, Germany, Ireland bought about 138,000 excess ones. And they're obviously doing better.
And in Austria, are they looking at a fourth wave, or are they still in their third wave, or where are they?
Yeah, I think that's really confusing, because I think did people come out of a second wave, or they're in the third wave? The Austrians are doing too well. No, they've been slow on the vaccines, but they actually haven't. They've been getting the vaccines out into people's arms pretty well, but they started reopening in February, early February, even though the cases were very, very high, well over 200 per 100,000. And then, you know, things have escalated since then. And so that's why Kurz is coming under huge pressure. He's been blaming the EU for it, but he was the one who didn't buy enough of his vaccines. So they've gone into another sort of strong restrictions. Actually, I think most countries now are around Easter time locking down because it's the time of year where people will be visiting family. So each country is sort of moving to clamp down a little bit for at least 4 weeks.
Yeah. Now, Spain, I suppose, one of the first countries for COVID to really be hit hard. What's the situation there?
And whose economy has been hit so hard because obviously tourism and so on. But what's interesting is you can go to Spain and you can have dinner in a restaurant sitting outside or inside with up to 30% capacity up until 5 p.m. And in Madrid, you can do it till around 10 p.m. So I have three colleagues who are all going to Spain for Easter to visit family. They're Spanish. Two of them are going to Madrid. One's going to Barcelona. And Spain is a place which is a bit of an outlier because they do have rising cases. The overall Spanish number is about 164 per 100,000, which is pretty high and growing. And the Spain vaccine rollout, they actually refuse to give their figures on it, but it's not doing as well. They don't have, let's say, 100% of people over 80 vaccinated yet. So everyone's sort of looking at them tentatively saying, how's this going to work out? People are obviously, you know, it's better if the weather is much better, and they do have an enforced mask mandate obligatory everywhere, including on the beach. But Spain is really trying to reopen, and possibly prematurely. It's the country that has been pushing for these vaccine passports as soon as possible. They want to start using them in June so that the older population around Europe, particularly British people, who will be fully vaccinated by then, can start coming over to Spain. But I think we have to just wait and see what's going to happen over the next few weeks. The fact that they have open hospitality, I think it's pretty much the only place in Europe where you have open hospitality.
With that, is there a relationship between that and the mood of the public in Spain, comparatively speaking?
Yeah, I mean, well, Spain has such a tragic story of COVID. It had the worst lockdown, 6 weeks of intense lockdown where people couldn't move outside their homes last year. Their economy completely crashed. Spain initially, you know, have suffered huge trauma. And so there was calls by industry in particular to try to reopen, to try to salvage industry in whatever way could possibly do that. Spain is also receiving, I mean, the vast bulk of grants from the 750 billion euro EU rescue fund. So it should probably get around 90 billion euro to revive the industries and the sectors that have been badly hit, the bars and the restaurants and so on. So they'll obviously be getting their, you know, reimbursements of that within the next couple of months. So they'll try to use it and try to shore up the summer season as much as possible.
Now, in Germany, and obviously Germany had suspended vaccines. Are they still, to a limited extent, suspending vaccines for various people?
Yeah, I mean, this is just lots of layers in the German response. But the AstraZeneca thing is just a bit, I think people are sort of a little bit concerned about how this comes across. But yes, this week they decided to suspend AstraZeneca for people under 65 because of 31 cases of an extreme blood clot in younger people. Because initially, Germany had suspended the use of AstraZeneca for the over 65s, and then after that suspended it completely. So it's a bit messy, and I think there's a real concern that this is going to impact on the rollout of the vaccine for Germany, because of course there's a concern over AstraZeneca amongst young people, amongst old people, and in Germany and France are two countries that have the worst types of anti-vaxxer movements, very loud anti-vaxxer movements there, in particular in Germany, because we know that groups like the AfD, the far right, have been on the rise anyway, and they tend to be the ones who are sort of pushing it, as well as a lot of those, a lot of people coming from sort of the naturopath world and so on. So there's a real concern about how that's going to, you know, map out over the next few months when Germany finally does get more AstraZeneca vaccines. Will people use them? Because there has been reports that people are refusing AstraZeneca. Now, the other thing about Germany is it actually tentatively started reopening on the 2nd of March. It had a plan, you know, 2nd of March, then, you know, it's reopened schools. Then the 8th of March was reopening services, you know, close contact services like beauty parlors, hairdressers, and so on. And they said that they would have an emergency break if cases rose above 100,000, 100 per 100,000. And they're about on 108 per 100,000 now overall. So they have implemented, they are considering implementing that emergency break. But then the thing about Germany is, you know, that the federal states, the lender, are the ones who really call the shots about how these things are done. And Angela Merkel is having a very tough time trying to get a coordinated response around this. In fact, she had to apologize last week because she wanted to have an Easter lockdown and then was resisted. But there are parts of Germany as well that only have the numbers of around 500 per 100,000, and they're going to remain open. So, yeah, I mean, the Olaf Scholz, who's one of the finance ministers, called it a shit show situation in Germany. And yeah, and that, I think, is something that I think the population is feeling as well. There's blame against the EU as well. And it's a bit messy. I mean, there is hope again that the vaccine supply will be back on stream. The EU hopes 355 million vaccines in the second quarter for the whole of the EU. 55 million of those will be the Johnson & Johnson, which is just one shot. So you should see it ramped up. And that, and then the issue of vaccine hesitancy will come in, because then we'll know if that is actually a real issue. If so far we're hearing that around 23% of German people won't take a vaccine.
Wow. And it's France just gone into a lockdown for this Easter as well. A similar issue.
Huge issue.
Or even worse.
The worst, actually, of the whole, probably one of the worst in the world then, because the EU is worse than the US and the UK. And I actually spoke to a French diplomat a few weeks ago about this, and he told me it was around 70% hesitancy. Now, that's not the same as anti-vaxxer. That would be people who are sort of concerned about, you know, why did the vaccine take such a short amount of time? People who have questions, they have reduced that to around 50 or 45% because the government has really ramped up its communications around the vaccine, particularly after Emmanuel Macron said it was quasi-effective, the AstraZeneca vaccine. That didn't go down too well. So France is having a really tough time. We heard from Emmanuel Macron last night. He said that the deaths in France could reach 100,000 in total by the end of this month. So that's obviously huge. So what he did last night was extend the lockdown that exists in Paris for the whole of France. And it's not as actually tight as their original lockdown in the first wave. It's just more that they're, you have to be home by 7 p.m., retail shops are closed, the bars and restaurants have been closed for some time, and they're trying to ask people not to leave the country. But again, I've two colleagues who are up in Lyon who are off to Spain for the weekend and they're able to do it. But interesting, my colleague here in Belgium, it's very difficult to leave here in Belgium. They're trying to stop people leave. You have to fill out a form, have it stamped, and prove that you're going for necessary reasons. One of my colleagues is going to Barcelona. She's visiting her 91-year-old sick mother, so she's able to go. But here in Belgium, for example, they are trying to stop people from leaving outside the border.
Crikey. What's that? What's the rate per 100,000 in France?
It's well over 200 per 100,000 in France now.
Wow. Okay,
but it's climbing right. Exponentially.
That's it's as depressing everywhere else as it is here. Shona, stay well. Thanks a million for speaking with us today. That was Shona Murray there, European correspondent with Euronews. You did hear her quote lots of figures. I think the latest one that we have in Ireland is per 100,000. We're about 158 per 100,000, as you heard there. Austria's 200 per 100,000, Spain 164, Germany 108, France north of 200 per 100,000. So not great most places. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We're going to take a break after that. What's the future for the high street?
Moncrief on News Talk.